I think surgeons shouldn't be selling surgery. I think if patients feel like they're being sold something or feel like they're being forced a little bit or constantly being told it's going to be okay, for me, that's a red flag, because any surgeon who does enough of his specialty will be realistic on what the potential risks are, not just saying you're going to look fabulous. That's selling. I disagree with that from a philosophical point of view. I don't think we should be doing that. I think surgeons are trained to fix problems. And I don't feel like a cosmetic surgeon is in that space. They don't have that skill set to do that. So what should patients be asking to their surgeon prior to surgery? I mean, obviously, if sometimes medical locations do this operation regularly, what are your common complications that you would see? Do you have any photos that you could show me? And it's not necessarily all the stuff you see on Instagram. I want to see other things as well. Problem with Instagram is Instagram can be filtered. It can be smudged out a bit. When you start looking at high resolution photos on someone's computer, that changes and you start seeing some of those things. I think everyone always wants to post their best results on Instagram or online. And I think that's where it can be a little bit misleading, because that doesn't necessarily mean that is going to be the outcome for you.
Welcome to the Australian Weight Loss Surgery Podcast, where every 2 weeks we explore all the aspects of the weight loss surgery journey. You'll hear from a range of experts, including bariatric surgeons, psychologists, patients, and dietitians, sharing up-to-date, informative advice to help fast-track your long-term weight loss success.
Welcome to today's episode of the Australian Weight Loss Surgery Podcast. I'm Jackie Lewis. I'm your host. I'm a clinical nutritionist for BN Healthy. Today's guest is Dr. Justin Perrin, trained specialist plastic and reconstructive surgeon, as well as the owner and founder of his Spring Hill-based clinic, Herstellen Clinic. Dr. Justin Perrin comes from a family of medics, with his father also a surgeon. It's fair to say that Dr. Perrin has dedicated his life's work to helping men and women from all walks of life to repair and rejuvenate their bodies through plastic and reconstructive surgery. From the subtle enhancements to life-changing transformations, he truly is a master in the artistry and precision. He studied chemistry and biochemistry in Canada at the University of Calgary before moving to Australia to pursue his medical training in 2000. Dr. Justin Perrin completed his Bachelor of Medicine and Bachelor of Surgery at Flinders University in Adelaide before moving to Queensland in 2003. Dr. Perrin is a member of the Royal Australasian Society of Surgeons, Australian Society of Plastic Surgeons, Australasian Society of Aesthetic Plastic Surgery, the American Society for Aesthetic Plastic Surgery, and Queensland Hand Surgery Society. Dr. Justin Perrin offers a variety of surgical procedures such as skin cancer treatment and removal, abdominoplasty, circumferential liposabdominoplasty, breast augmentation, breast reduction, removal and replacement of implants, brachioplasty, liposuction, upper body lipectomy, blepharoplasty, gynecomastia, open fasciectomy, and breast reconstruction after breast cancer. Dr. Perrin also performs hand surgery for common conditions such as carpal tunnel release, open fasciectomy, ganglion and cyst removal, as well as the repair of various hand injuries. Dr. Perrin has always felt strongly about the importance of pre- and post-operative nutrition to aid in his patient's recovery. More recently, Dr. Perrin has expanded on this implementation of his very own micronutrient infusions and the inclusion of multidisciplinary health professionals to support his vision. Welcome to the show, Dr. Justin Perrin. Thanks very much for your time today. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks for inviting me. It's kind of a privilege to get phone calls from some of the podcasters out there to do a little interview. And it's a real privilege. And thanks for inviting me on.
I think it's a topic that is under-covered and under-recognized as far as its importance goes, which I think is the key, is helping our audience to make educated decisions and safe decisions as well. So being a surgeon yourself and working with bariatric patients as part of your practice, I know I was reading your bio and it's so broad and your skill set is quite unique. And so that's why it's great to have you on. Does a patient find the right surgeon?
Look, always a good question. I think it doesn't matter if it's a plastic surgeon colorectal or someone who's going to be taking gallbladder out, you know, whatever it might be. I would say there's a few things that I would say are important in those. I think one, finding someone who either has, well, they have to be certified. They have to have the correct training. That's probably the most important. Making sure that the regular surgeon, not the occasional surgeon, I think that's probably the other thing. There are some surgeons, I'm not saying it's like that in plastics, but certainly in some surgical specialties, you know, some surgeons will say, oh yeah, I do that operation. Cool. But it's something you do regularly. And I think some, you know, we're all probably a little bit guilty of it early on in our careers where we know we can do the operation. We've been trained to do it. We just may not have done as many as we possibly would like to have. I think a lot of that is just an honest conversation with the patients. You know, the right surgeon, I think there's always a relationship that happens between patient and doctor. Sometimes it's a little bit like speed dating is probably the closest I could make an analogy to is you're only seeing a surgeon for a short period of time and you kind of have to gauge if you know, your personality is bland. Do I like the right language that they were using? You know, the certain approach? Did they listen to what I was saying? I think a lot of that is more of an interview process for both people. I think a lot of it is really setting for patients to say, look, my goals for having a discussion with my surgeon are I want to be comfortable with them. I want to know that they have the right qualifications. I want to know that they do these types of surgeries regularly and they're happy to do it. And also more importantly, it's not so much the operation, but it's also the follow-up and management. So do they have a good team? You know, are there nurses that are available or are they available? If things go wrong, it does happen. That's part of the risks of surgeries, that things like infections or bleeding or, you know, I'm not happy with this scar. What do we do then? I think that's an honest conversation to have with the surgeon. I think some surgeons might deflect a little bit and, you know, nothing's going to happen. You'll be fine. Sure. But what if it does? You know, maybe there's a 2% chance of something happening. But what if I'm in that 2%? Then what? Right. So I think a lot of it is just sort of getting that sense of, you know, who you're managing and who you're dealing with. And I guess making sure that they're realistic with you as well or realistic about your outcomes. You know, important things to bring to a consult are photos of what you want to achieve with the patient. And I think that sort of sets the boundaries and that sort of sets the stage for, am I realistic about this? You know, is my surgeon going to say to me, you know, this is not really where you're going to end up. You know, you really need to, these are the photos that I'm going to show of other patients that are things that are really important that I think potentially you might end up with. So that conversations and those conversations are the things. And I think a lot of throughout that process, it's the back and forth where you can develop that sort of feel that you're with the right person.
It is that. It's a conversation, isn't it? And I think there's a tendency for us to consult with a healthcare provider and hand it over to them and trust. And it's great because we need trust in every relationship. But I think without having those questions of what do you want out of it? What are my risks? You know, what am I getting myself into? It's always key because then I think there's responsibility on both sides, which is important because if something does go wrong, it could be a number of different things. And it's not always the surgeon's, you know, it's not always the surgery that goes wrong, like we'll explain later on as far as nutrition and recovery and that sort of thing goes. So it's very easy when things don't go well to say, well, it was the surgery and therefore the surgeon. But there's all sorts of things that would be communicated. If you've built that open and communicative relationship to begin with, I think that's a key.
Yeah, no, and I think I completely agree. I think you're on that step is that it's not all on the surgery or the surgeon. I think patients need to know that it's a relationship that you enter with your surgeon and it goes both ways. It's a collaboration that, you know, your surgeon should be there to help assist along that surgical journey. But I think patients also need to be responsible and not do silly things. So surgeons will say, look, you know, my recommendation afterwards is to avoid exercise for this long. It's to, you know, wear your garment, give us a call if you see anything. That's a little bit of a contract that you've got between, you know, surgeon and patient where patients also have responsibilities. And I think it's a really important thing. It doesn't mean that it's like a heavy duty sort of thing. It's just that it's very much, yeah, where patients need to understand that it's not, you know, surgery doesn't heal all. There's a whole bunch of stuff that happens in the meantime.
And I think the information that's relayed for recovery or for preparation and that sort of thing is not to be taken lightly because it's obviously, I think that's all given for a reason and it might not be clear to the patient what those reasons are. Like pre-op diet for a bariatric patient, most of that is about surgical safety, not necessarily weight loss. So yes, it's preparing them for the surgical process ahead, the new lifestyle and the way of managing their diet. But a key component of that pre-op stage is very much about surgical safety. So it's put in there for a reason is what I'm trying to say, I suppose, is that we see it in our group. It's like, well, you know, they told me to do this 2-week thing of shakes, so I'm just going to try this. And it's a variation. And I see that there's almost a temperament that a patient will have. And it's very much either, well, the surgeon said I should do this, so I'm going to do it to the letter, or the surgeon said I should do this, so I'm just going to try this way. What about you guys? Have you done anything differently and how well has it gone for you? So it's like there's almost that kind of walk around it from the very beginning, which sets alarm bells off for me for later on down the track when there's a whole new lifestyle that needs to be taken on. Yeah, so it must be hard to give that information, and that's the safety guidelines in a preparation stage for surgery, and just cross your fingers and hope that the patient did it when they come back in for the surgery. It is responsibility.
It is pretty funny. I mean, it's almost like, and I suppose, you know, in this day of internet memes, a lot of it is like watching people who take recipes off the internet and they do substitutions. And then they say, yeah, I did the substitution and it didn't work and your recipe's terrible. So like just because you substituted potatoes for your carrot cake doesn't mean it's going to end up tasting real good. Maybe that was not the way the recipe went. You should have maybe just followed it the way it was supposed to go. But I know we do get, honestly, I do get some patients who ask a lot of those questions, and that's really important because they say, well, I think in a lot of that time is really just educating patients, getting them to understand the complexities and nuances of surgery and surgery recovery, surgery follow-up, and, you know, best outcome. During that initial consult, I do have photos where I say, look, you know, this patient came to see me. They were this weight, was clearly too much. I told them, go away, lose some weight. Here they are 6 months later with a lower weight. And now we can see the outcome that they're going to get. And you can see patients, you know, they'll look at that and say, cool. So you can just do liposuction for that, right? I'm like, cool. No, you absolutely can't. That's, you know, liposuction is not a weight loss technique. It is just a contouring technique. But, you know, that's a very common question.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And I guess because you do have that diverse skill set, there'd be questions like that because they know that something that you do, it's not, you know, a step in the process as well. Yeah. So talking about good surgery, what also makes a good surgical patient? Like when someone comes to you and they're looking for surgery or they need surgery, what strikes you as being the most important things for you as a surgeon?
I think a lot of what we've just discussed towards the end of that last bit, it applies for sure. So I think patients who are involved, so I think patients who, you know, they're interested in their care, they're interested in asking questions, they want to know the outcome, but also they're realistic about how things are. You know, everyone has different expectations, different outcomes, and it's really important to be able to say, I have, you know, this outcome that I want, and here's a photo of what I was hoping to get. Great, let's talk about that. It's almost, you know, same thing of going to an orthopedic surgeon and saying, yeah, like I've injured my knee and I need a knee reconstruction. Look, I want to be skiing in about 6 months or 8 months. Do you think that that's realistic? I think those are the kind of questions in particular, like plastic surgery are very similar. And it could be patients who come in and they have a very high BMI and they have a very particular body type in mind. And in some cases, I'll tell them, you know, that particular outcome is possible, but it's not in one go. You know, this is something that takes multiple goes. And you have to be the right weight beforehand. So you also have to do your own homework and your own kind of prep. Yeah. I think motivated patients are, you know, they're motivated and that's good. I would say that patients who follow strict diets and very strict nutritional regimens will be prepared for surgery. I do get some patients who come back after 3 months and they're like, yeah, so I know you told me to lose 10 or 15 kilograms. Yeah, I've lost one. Is that good enough? I'm like, absolutely not. And that's, look, it's hard. You know, food's delicious, but at the same time, it also is a red flag for me because I know that if I see those patients after surgery, we need you to follow the rules because if you don't, then we're going to end up with problems and potentially poor outcomes, which nobody really wants.
No, exactly. Not for anybody, surgeon or patient as well. So, yeah, we're looking at questions about what are the things we should explore before surgery. Firstly, we were going to clarify the difference between, like you're saying, qualifications. I guess there's a different understanding of cosmetic surgery versus plastic surgery. Do you want to go into that at all?
Oh, sure. I think particularly APRA has recently gone through this whole overhaul of surgery, particularly cosmetic surgery in Australia. And the important, I guess, takeaway from that is that as of now, well, as of halfway through the year, the title of surgeon is protected. So anybody who doesn't use surgeon in their title, they're not a trained surgeon. There is a bit of a weird pathway that APRA feels like they can certify patients or certify doctors to be called cosmetic surgeons. My personal opinion in that is that it doesn't necessarily sound like it's going to be safe for patients. I think just because you call yourself a surgeon and you've taken a quick course, you know, that's not what surgery is about. Surgery is like any surgery, like any medical specialty is, it's training. It's recognizing rare things that might happen. It's recognizing who is a good and who is a poor surgical candidate. It's recognizing all the problems that can come through, potentially foreseeing a risk that you've been trained to do. I know, you know, plastic surgeons, we're trained to treat patients and to manage their surgical outcomes. I think, you know, cosmetic practitioners, they've got a very superficial view on a lot of that. And I don't think their skill set even is reasonable to manage potentially small or big complications that come out of that. And I know that because I see them. So I've seen patients who come in with infections after facelifts. I've seen patients who come in with gross asymmetry in their breasts, patients who've come in with at the point where they're going to need ICU admission because they're so septic from infected abdominal infections post-abdominoplasty. I've seen patients with foreign bodies in their breasts after having breast implants overseas, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Like, it's quite significant. And I would say that, you know, what would you look for in what should patients be asking their surgeon prior to surgery? I think surgeons shouldn't be selling surgery. I think if patients feel like they're being sold something or feel like they're being forced a little bit or constantly being told it's going to be okay, for me, that's a red flag, because any surgeon who does enough of his specialty will be realistic on what the potential risks are, not just saying you're going to look fabulous. That's selling. I disagree with that from a philosophical point of view. I don't think we should be doing that. I think surgeons are trained to fix problems. And I don't feel like a cosmetic surgeon is in that space. They don't have that skill set to do that. So what should patients be asking to their surgeon prior to surgery? I mean, obviously, if it's not in a collocation, do you do this operation regularly? Mm-hmm. What are your common complications that you would see? Do you have any photos that you could show me? And it's not necessarily all the stuff you see on Instagram. I want to see other things as well. Problem with Instagram is Instagram can be filtered. It can be smudged out a bit. When you start looking at high resolution photos on someone's computer, that changes and you start seeing some of those things. I think everyone always wants to post their best results on Instagram or online. And I think that's where it can be a little bit misleading, because that doesn't necessarily mean that is going to be the outcome for you. And I think particularly with body lifts and abdominoplasties and, you know, thigh lifts and arm lifts, I mean, there's a whole host of problems you can have with patients. And sure, we can post all of our best results online, but realistically, everyone's going to have a small little wound breakdown because the nutrition's not right. Everyone's going to have a little, you know, tiny infection. Their belly button may look a bit weird. You know, all that kind of realistic stuff that is there. And I think, again, having that back and forth with a surgeon early is really good, because it also sets up your own personal kind of framing of where you're going to be, rather than thinking it's just going to be perfect afterwards. I'm going to look like Brad Pitt, or I'm going to look like whoever else it is.
Yeah.
Not necessarily. You have to understand that we have to have that conversation back and forth.
And what I'm hearing is that surgery, when we talk about it, surgeon or surgery, it's not necessarily about the act. Do you know what I mean? It is. And that's the skill set, but it's also all of that other stuff that comes with it, the seeing what might go wrong and the ability to kind of intervene and preempt things, which doesn't come with these cosmetic surgeons or practitioners. I think that's something to be very clear on as well. It must be a big responsibility for you every day of the week, really, mustn't it?
I think that's where we've been trained to do this. You know, we went many, many years of specialty training, and there's a reason why we do that. You know, specialty training is countless hours of doing all kinds of stuff. And I think, does hand trauma or lower limb trauma or burns, does that affect the way I would approach a body lift patient? Absolutely. You know, I learned nutrition and how to deal with nutritional deficits in burns patients, because that's what happens in burns patients. You know, you learn the ability to manage infected wounds in hand trauma. You learn how to manage post-operative complications by looking at lower limb traumas and all the rest of it. A lot of these very loud mouth, prominent cosmetic surgeons who keep saying that cosmetic surgery is different from plastic surgery, they're just trying to fool everybody into believing that they can work in some surgical ghetto in Australia. And the reality of it is, no, surgery is still surgery. It doesn't matter if an appendix or a knee replacement or brain operation or a breast reduction. It's the same principles. And these guys don't have that skill set. They don't have that mindset. And quite frankly, I don't think they've got the ethos or the understanding in a lot of ways. And not to get disparaging, but, and I'm going to a little bit, but not to get too disparaging, but I mean, a lot of these guys have, they've either been on a surgical training program and had to be removed for performance or just lack of personal investment in it, and didn't really want to do the long yards and didn't want to do the really difficult exam at the end. You know, that's part of it. When you start a job, you finish it. You don't sort of start a job as a lawyer and finish it and be like, I'm a legal practitioner who operates just in legal, you know, whatever you kind of want to make up, that's kind of what's happening.
Yeah, that almost, but not quite, isn't it really?
And it's embarrassing that APRA had taken this long to do it. I don't think they've necessarily solved the problem entirely, but it's a future problem for us to work on and work through. But
yeah, and I think this is the opportunity, is talking about these changes and then what patients should be looking for if they are, at the time has come and they're looking for body lift surgery or something else after bariatric surgery, knowing what to look for. If you're, many people, if they're looking down at having surgery, they'll consult with their GP and they will refer to a surgeon. Then is that the first surgeon we should instigate as our surgeon, or how do we go about sort of looking around for not top of the game, but someone who can do the job well and safely?
Yeah, no, I agree. So I think GPs, they have their finger on the pulse for a lot of that stuff. I think they might give you a few suggestions. You know, you don't necessarily have to take the first offer as the only person. Obviously, getting online and, you know, I think, you know, on some of the forums, I think are fantastic because everyone posts their, you know, the pre, their post, their intra. And I think that's one of the big things with surgery. Surgery is not just the operation. I would say that there's four parts to surgery. Well, three, sometimes four. There's all the pre-op stuff. There's the actual surgery and all the stuff that goes around preparing for that time in hospital. And then the third part is the recovery. And so the follow-up that is absolutely necessary to make sure that everything's going the right way. And then the fourth thing is revisions. You know, at some point, you know, some patients might need a revision. So everyone always likes to think that surgery is literally just the operation. But in actual fact, it's all those parts that need to be dealt with specifically.
And I guess that's part of your questioning as a patient is, what can I expect? Pre, what do you put in place for support and follow up and that sort of thing, keeping an eye on things? I see a lot of patients in our group who are posting at 9 o'clock on a Friday night about pain in their wounds and, you know, and I see that they're almost reluctant to bother their surgeon with these questions. And I always direct them back to go straight to your surgeon and find out what that is and risk feeling silly, because it could be something, it might be nothing. How do you manage that in a patient? Like, when should we call? When should we not call? When should we consult Facebook? No.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. I think, you know, first protocol should be the surgeon and the nurses at that surgical team. One, we've seen it all. We can give you an answer right away. Send a photo, send a pic, whatever it might be. I mean, I'll be honest, my phone never turns off. I mean, sometimes I'm out of radio contact because I'm in an airplane or, you know, I'm physically out, but we've always got backup for that with the practice. But I would say that we just have to be stuff that some people will send online and some and things people say that are online can be very incorrect. And I think that's where I always get a little bit hesitant to say to patients, oh, just find your answer online. That's not, you know, patients, you paid your surgeon probably a lot of really good money to solve whatever problem you need to. It's also up to them to manage that. So that's part of that. So they should be available to answer your questions and they should be available to do that. That's what you've hired them to do. That's the contract you have in place for them. Like any contract, is that you should be there. And I think there's nothing wrong with asking that of your surgeon. I need to be, when are you available to answer questions? You know, if I'm scared, worried that something bad's happening, what do we do?
Then you're better off asking rather than waiting and worrying. And then if it is something, it could have been intervened with much earlier and often a better outcome, sooner the better. Particularly when you're healing, or if there's infection that's starting to set up camp as well. It's one of those things to get onto really quickly. Thank you. It's great because I do see that a lot of patients are reluctant to bother the surgeon or the surgical team. And I say the same thing. It's what you pay for. It should be part of the service. It's not just the surgery. And you should be able to expect to call and have your concerns dealt with as well. So talking about recovery and nutrition, and this is where I love to delve into, of course, how important is nutrition in the preoperative stage for any kind of surgery, but particularly, I guess, because it's pertinent to our bariatric audience as well?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's literally, if you open up any surgical textbook, chapter one is nutrition. It is literally the most important part of having that discussion. You can do the most amazing procedure with, you know, left, right, and center and all this other amazing stuff. But if you're not eating well and you don't have the right, you know, micronutrients that are going to go along with that, you're not going to heal, not healing, bad outcome, et cetera. So it is the first step of a surgical textbook is how important is nutrition. It is everything. Yeah. So I would say that for a lot of patients, particularly who have been in the bariatric side, a lot of it is just is approaching a surgeon being like, right, so where do I need to be from a BMI point of view to achieve the best possible outcome? And most surgeons will say you need to be at a low BMI that is around, you know, that 25 to 27 mark. Some surgeons are happy to operate on patients who are a bit bigger. I would always push my patients to get as low as they can. And for me, there's not really any compromise. I think patients are like, yeah, I really want this surgery, but 29 BMI seems close enough to 27. And I'm like, but it's still not. You know, that's part of that contract is I'm happy to commit to providing a service, but you need to be ready on the other side. And the other side, you know, that big thing is nutrition. You know, nutrition to get patients down in weight and get them at the right BMI does take a calorie deficient diet. You're going to be hungry. It's going to suck. But, you know, that's only for a short period of time until you can get to the other side. And I think nutrition is the cornerstone for all of that, for any surgical procedure. Is 100% diet and good nutrition. We all have our weak points. We all have our weak moments and our cheat days, and that's totally normal. But it's like anything in life, you've got to put the hard work in to get the good results.
Yeah, I don't know if that's talked about enough, that repletion, like we talk about repletion before surgery. So we know 90% of bariatric patients go into surgery with or explore surgery, they're vitamin D deficient, they're B12 deficient, and they're often iron deficient. And coincidentally, they're the most impacted nutrients once we perform bariatric surgery. So if you're behind the eight ball beforehand, but catching up, it's a really important time to actually look at getting those levels up before the operation even happens. Yeah. For that reason, or recovery, but also it's so hard to catch those nutrients up. You're just continually chasing. And like you were saying, you see people who are having iron infusion month after month because once the surgery is done, very difficult to catch, particularly iron. And for women, it's a particularly hard one to catch up. I remember reading many years ago a study they did with just a general multivitamin supplement in patients. I think they were hip operation patients after about 65 years old. And one group got a multivitamin as part of their recovery and one poor group didn't get one. And I think they were talking about reduction in, you know, complications and a better healing rate and all that sort of stuff. It was about a 65% improvement just from taking a basic multi in that recovery stage. I don't think you can speak highly enough to that. It's certainly all of those nutrients making healthy skin cells, healthy blood cells, clearing inflammation. It's a whole cascade of different things that need to happen. We look at protein in that recovery stage, and generally the average patient might need 1 gram of protein per kilogram per day. After surgical, during surgical recovery, we would look at up to 1.4 grams because there's so much, the demand is so high for that recovery stage, which is significant. You've just had, you know, your tummy reduced to a tiny little thing. It's looking at how do we get that in to help them recover as well as maintain muscle at the same time. So the needs are high. Again, we do talk about protein targets after bariatric surgery, but it's nice to know the why. And I think that's a really important part of the patient's responsibility. It's like they're saying, I need 80 to 90 grams of protein a day. What's it for? And I think once you know the why, I'm big on that, is explaining the why so that it's something that it's more doable and it becomes more important because we know what it's actually going to do. Whereas if we haven't looked at nutrition before and haven't necessarily been on that kind of lifestyle, and then we turn up for bariatric surgery and it's all about protein and nutritions and supplements, and I don't think it's explained why often enough. So take this multivitamin for the rest of your life and it'll help you. But the why is not necessarily elaborated on. So it helps with compliance and helps with long-term health outcomes when we know what we're doing and every day kind of how that's helping us. I think it's a tricky one because we talk about taking a supplement and paying for it, and we're paying for something that's almost intangible really because we're not sure how that's making us feel. A lot of people are like, oh yeah, I took it and I didn't feel any different. And I'm like, yeah, but how would you feel if you didn't take it? And also, what is your understanding of feeling good? I mean, if you've been morbidly obese for a number of years and you've suddenly lost 60 kilograms, you're going to feel good. Then if you add your supplements into it, how good could you feel? It's also awakening to this understanding of what good feels like as well. I think we become sort of accepting of low energy and fatigue and brain fog and that sort of thing, and think it's just part of getting old or getting tired or whatever. But often it is nutrient deficiency that we could certainly feel 100%.
Yeah, and, no, I agree with all that. I think it is hard because everyone's frame of reference is quite different, particularly when you've come from a very, you know, large or high BMI. Once you get your BMI down, suddenly you kind of forget that whole frame of reference. And I see that with a lot of patients who they lose a stonking amount of weight, and then they come in and their BMI is still high. And they're like, yeah, I've lost 70 kilograms or 60 kilograms. I'm like, that's great. You need to lose a few more because of the risks when we get into the risk of surgery in a high BMI patient. And it's hard because that frame of reference is that you've been big all your life, that you're not. You know, your frame of reference is here, and we need it here. And it's very tough. Same thing from a nutritional point of view. Same thing from an exercise point of view. Like, it's all those things. And it is very hard to adjust that frame of reference for patients. It really takes time.
It must be hard news to deliver as well when you know this patient has excelled at losing weight, and then you're going to say, can you just lose a little bit more? It must be a tough conversation to have.
Not really. I think it's one of those things where, you know, being honest with patients and just doing your job to be able to say, great, you know, I'm happy to do the surgery. There's no risks from a medical point of view. There's nothing holding you back except for this one thing. And as long as you get that down, you'll actually be a very good surgical candidate. Would I do it now? No. I think it would be high risk. And because we're doing something that potentially carries high risk, it sort of says, why don't we minimize that risk as much as we can? It would go the same thing for driving a car that's flooded. You know, you drive it through one of those flooded things. Like, it's probably low risk, but you don't really know. And I think that's one of the things where you have to kind of keep that perspective of, what do we want? I don't need everyone to be emaciated supermodels, but I think we just need to be in that safe range where we can, you know, if something does happen, you know, we can all put our hands in our hearts and say, look, we did the best we could. We got you to the best possible thing we've done. Sure, you know, this is one of those small events that can happen, but we'll work through it to get to a good result on the other side.
That's the other thing to talk about, is the why of the BMI, because it only sounds like a few numbers, doesn't it? Like 27 to 29, but the health incrementally, the health risks do increase. It's inflammation. It's a whole lot of other things. Even that's good for a patient to understand, is why we're aiming for a certain safer number. And it doesn't take much to kind of creep into a higher risk cat. When you look at even obesity, it's between, you know, 30 and 35. 25 and 30 is, shape-wise, it doesn't look a whole lot different. Internally, so much is happening from a physiological perspective. That's what's increasing the risk, is that visceral fat, the inflammation markers, the inflammatory cytokines and that sort of thing, which is all part of that risk of infection and recovery and bleeding and all those sorts of things. So it's another why, I suppose. It's a good one to understand why we say that. So it's great to clarify. My last question for you is, what nutritional support should surgeons be offering?
I guess all part of that, I think it depends on who they're treating and what they think they need. I think post-bariatric patients are very specific based on the way I look at gastric sleeve, for example, is that they're going to be malnourished because you've always had part of your stomach removed. So there is a high chance that you will be malnourished from a micronutrient point of view, not necessarily a macronutrient point of view, but definitely from a, there's a high risk. I would say from a gastric sleeve, or sorry, that's a gastric sleeve. Gastric bypass is more of a malabsorbing patient, meaning you can give them stuff. And if it bypasses that first part of the duodenum or that first part of the small intestine, they can potentially be malabsorbing, meaning you're not absorbing the right stuff at the right time. Patients who've had a sleeve and a bypass, they're both malnourished and malabsorbing. So they're potentially the riskier of those patients. So I think rushing into a surgery where someone comes in and they're like, yep, you're ready to go. Let's, you know, I got time next week. I think you really need to evaluate those patients from a nutritional standpoint. And it's not just a full blood count and an ELFT. We've got to do zinc, B12, you know, B complex. Have a look at where your vitamin D is sitting. Have a look at where everything's sitting because all of that affects the recovery process.
Yeah.
Even though you can be at a good, healthy BMI, physiologically, if we're not good, your risks are just as high as anybody else's. And so having that good nutrition getting into an operation is really important. And we do that, again, with burns patients. We do that with elderly who come in after a fall. You know, they've been at home, they've broken a hip. And you look at their nutrition and you're like, yeah, there's a reason why, you know, 55-year-old, 82-year-old women, or sorry, 55-kilogram, 82-year-old woman who comes in with a broken hip, there's a reason they don't heal well. And that's because they're nutritionally deficient. So even though we can get patients who come in and they still have a high BMI, they can still technically be very malnourished because of the fact that they haven't necessarily had that correct direction for diet. They haven't had the right supplements or their supplements just aren't even absorbing. And so we've got to screen and kind of see where all that sits. So what should doctors be offering? Well, I think they should be offering a fairly comprehensive nutritional support on either pre and postoperatively, depending on A, if they do them fairly regularly, but B, I think it depends on patients and what they're doing. So what I mean by that is if you're going to see your surgeon to have an operation, they should be testing for that as a preemptive investment
part of the care.
To make sure that we're not missing anything on the other side.
It's interesting because when we started in our field providing supplements for weight loss surgery patients, it took us a long time to get past the surgeons because a lot of them thought it wasn't necessary. So it's come a long way in probably the 10 years we've been involved. A lot of it was, no, we don't bother with that. They don't need that. And that's gone full circle now to technically start. Some of them, it's a contract. You know, you're entering into a surgical process that you have responsibility and you will need a supplement, a specific supplement for the rest of your life. Do you agree? So, yeah, it's great because I guess back in the day, we didn't have bariatric solutions for weight loss surgery patients. They were taking a pregnancy multivitamin or just a standard one. And I think as time's gone on, and it must be also that the surgeons have seen how important that is for that kind of recovery and the ongoing health of the patient. But, yeah, and just the involvement of dietitians and that holistic care, a lot of the surgeons didn't have that in the get-go, like before when we started up the Be and Healthy brand. It was like, oh, this is interesting. So now it's, you know, we talk to surgeons and dietitians, whereas it used to be, oh, no, that's the dietitian's job. But it is, it's like this whole on-board connection now, which is fantastic. So it must be great to see patients getting good outcomes from it too.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, looking back at where I would see bariatric patients leading into surgery, I would say 5-6 years ago, I would be transfusing patients a little bit more because they had low iron and low B12 leading into an operation. And now I see them and they're actually, the nutrition is way better. And I would say I transfuse them significantly less now than what I did a few years ago. And why is that? So I think patients who are nutritionally supported, particularly on that side, you know, any type of procedure we do, there's always a little bit of blood loss. And I would say that most surgeons would see that in body lifts at certain times. The issue is that if patients have good nutrition leading into that, their reserves, particularly for things like blood loss, are much better. And so if they come into that and they've had low iron, low B12, low protein, they can't make blood cells or red blood cells. And so as a result, they typically need more red cells on the other side. So they need to transfuse a little bit more. And I'd say I do a lot fewer transfusions now than what I did even 5-6 years ago. And I think that's when it started, everyone started realizing, actually, we got a real problem.
That's really interesting. Yeah, that's really interesting, isn't it? To see that connection and how the uptake of supplementing has that kind of long-term effect. Yeah, that's a nice, I'm just drawing that all together in my head, actually, how nice that is. Yeah, and I think it's a great, we're coming from every angle. And even now, when we go to the bariatric training course or to any conference, we're seeing so many more psychologists come along, which is fantastic because that never used to be a huge part of the process. And so now I was talking with one of them recently, and now it means patients who are having bariatric surgery, the supplement message from their surgeon, get the supplement message from their dietitian, and then get that supported again by the psychologist who, I think hearing it from three places, not saying that coming from one person or another, it's given more weight. But if you've heard the same thing three times about how important it is that you supplement now, it may just land. So it's that, and that's kind of what we do, is very much that keeping it front of mind how important these sorts of ideas are. Just a reminder, I think everybody gets busy and, you know, the surgery was a long time ago and it might not continue to be a part of the everyday. It's just good to remind. Yeah. Well, thank you.
Doesn't sort of pop up on the radar. Yeah, it is hard. I think particularly with, you know, seeing patients now, they're way more prepared. You know, I would see patients now begin on supplements and having the appropriate diet and fewer infections, better outcomes, better scars, you know, quality of the outcome is predictable and it's way better. And yeah, it's nutrition. Nutrition is really, really important.
Yeah, that's interesting. And so talking about surgery and surgeons, how would we locate you, Dr. Perrin?
Thanks. So I'm in Spring Hill in Brisbane and obviously on the usual online social medias and websites, either through Herstellen or just Google search my name. And that's pretty easy to do.
Yeah, I'll add that all to the show notes on the Australian Weight Loss Surgery Podcast website as well. Thank you so much for your time. It's been a really nice mix of how to look for safety and, you know, good practitioners as well as how important nutrition is. It's a really lovely blend. So I appreciate your time and I'm sure we'll talk again soon.
Will do. Appreciate the work.
Thank you, Dr. Perrin. I appreciate it.
Thanks for listening. And just before you go, we would love to hear your feedback. So please give us a rating and review. For other interesting topics of conversation and inspiration, come and drop into our Facebook community at BN Bariatric. If you've enjoyed our podcast, we hope you will share on your Facebook or Instagram and hit subscribe so you'll never miss an episode.